Good morning, it's 8 o'clock. You're listening to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. There's a small army of citizen scientists in the North Fork Valley. Residents in the Paonia area are donning special backpacks for 24 hours at a time to collect real-time data for studying air pollution. The aim is to measure what might be getting into the air from nearby oil and gas wells. Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher has more.
Bluebell!
Allison Gannett is calling one of her guard dogs. She has an impressive resume. She's an extreme skier, sustainability consultant, and raises a variety of animals, vegetables, and fruits. That's with her husband, Jason, on Holy Terror Farm. That scary name belies a bucolic setting. And on this Monday, Gannett is taking part in an unusual scientific study.
I am supposed to walk around doing my daily life just like normal and wear this backpack.
That buzzing in the background is a pump constantly sucking in air. It's in Gannett's bright orange and gray backpack. The idea is to take samples for 24 hours of the air she's breathing. This differs from most air quality oil and gas studies in Colorado, which use samples taken from fixed places.
The industry has said, well, you can't prove that someone actually breathed that air. So the point of this whole study is that I wear the testing device and it goes with me wherever I go. So I eat with it, I cook with it, I do all the farm chores with it.
Until we have a really good understanding of the pre-drilling and fracking and the post-drilling and fracking and how that might be changing what's in the air, we won't really be in a position to influence change.
That's Jim Ramey. He's director of Citizens for a Healthy Community, which gained attention after a successful effort to stop proposed oil and gas wells very close to, and in some cases in, the city limits of Paonia. Ramey is worried about another round of proposals to expand drilling in the area. This study is designed to collect what's called baseline data, information about chemicals in the air now. These data will then be compared to any changes in air quality if there are new oil and gas rigs. It hasn't been easy.
A lot of the residents who have been wearing the backpacks are thinking, well, can't I just set it outside, hang it on a tree? And I have to say, well, no, we're trying to get the personal exposure to the air, and that's why we're doing the backpack method.
The group has been preparing for a year to make sure volunteers know exactly what to do, to make sure the study produces reliable data.
If the study is meant to establish baselines and to collect data, then we applaud them for that.
David Ludlam is executive director of West Slope Colorado Oil and Gas Association. While the Paonia Citizens Group is often at odds with the mission of the industry organization, Ludlam says the more baseline data, the better. Still, he is more comfortable with scientific studies where academics are calling the shots. Across Colorado, there are efforts underway to improve monitoring of air quality at drilling operations. There is also growing pressure on the state to lower the industry's pollution, too. Governor John Hickenlooper recently suggested tightening regulations, and the state's health department is planning public hearings early next year. The minute-by-minute air sampling by Allison Gannett's backpack is especially important to her. Gannett's life literally depends on knowing how much oil and gas chemicals are in the air around her.
I have a brain tumor right now. One of the reasons I have a brain tumor is I have a genetic deficiency that allows me to not process chemicals like a normal person. So a low level of benzene that might not bother you is going to cause my brain tumor to grow. You know, how many people are out there like me that are extremely sensitive to chemicals? And I never even knew it until 3 weeks ago.
The study in Paonia will tell her whether she's safe from benzene and other oil and gas chemicals now, and how much leeway she has if new drilling starts nearby. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
And that report comes to us from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. Citizens for a Healthy Community announced yesterday a detailed version of the North Fork Alternative Plan has been submitted to the BLM. The plan was put together by a community coalition concerned about the future of oil and gas development in the North Fork Valley and seeks to limit the potential for drilling in the area. Jim Ramey with the CHC told the Watch newspaper there is a, quote, decent amount of land contained in the alternative plan that would be closed to oil and gas drilling. Still, stakeholders involved with the plan have stressed before that it's, quote, not a no-drilling plan. The BLM recently announced it would consider the North Fork alternative as part of its draft resource management plan for the Uncompahgre region. The much colder temperatures that have blown in after yesterday's winter storm could last well into next week and beyond. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel spoke with a National Weather Service forecaster who says colder than usual temperatures could even last into the next few weeks. 8 to 10 inches of snow fell over the Grand Valley over the past couple of days, about 4 to 8 inches around the North Fork Valley. Over a foot of snow reported for some areas around Montrose and into Gunnison County, also over a foot reported near Telluride. Booth told the Daily Sentinel it's possible we'll see an inch or two again this weekend in the valleys and more in the mountains. Record snow fell in the Grand Valley this week. Meanwhile, Coloradans along the Front Range are also seeing much more frigid weather today. Temperatures fell to negative 15 degrees in Denver, tying that city's record low. While this season's early wet start could bode well for snowpack levels and water supplies next year, researchers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration are looking at much longer-term forecasts for the Upper Colorado River Basin. NOAA published a report last week saying extreme dust events combined with the effects of global warming could lead to an earlier spring thaw in the mountains, with that thaw taking place as much as 6 weeks earlier than it is now by the year 2050. Researchers say without better soil conservation and control of blowing dust as the Earth's climate continues to warm, mountain snowpack might become dirtier more often and would therefore absorb more sunlight, and the snow would melt faster than in normal years. NOAA says if unprecedented extreme dust events like the ones seen in 2009 and 2010 continue to happen, it could lead to winter snows melting 40 days sooner or more. That means a risk to water users along the Upper Colorado River Basin in particular, which doesn't have the same kind of large reservoirs as the Lower Colorado. NOAA says the early disappearance of snow could also make the fire season longer and stress water ecosystems. Last year, when Amendment 64 legalized recreational marijuana in Colorado, it also legalized hemp. And since then, for the first time in decades, farmers around the state are considering growing the industrial fiber. For the latest edition of Sounds of the High Country from KDNK, Eric Scalak talks to reporter Alan Best, who wrote about Colorado hemp in a recent issue of High Country News.
Hemp and marijuana are very different things, even though they're related. It's all about the THC level, where recreational and medicinal marijuana, you know, the kind that makes you high, they have THC levels between 3 and 30%. Hemp plants have something like half of a percent. So though the plants are related, the uses are very different. Growing hemp used to be legal, but then the DEA got involved and things got a little complicated. Reporter Alan Best wrote about hemp for the most recent issue of the High Country News.
Near as I can tell, in 1937, when the federal legislation was first drawn up, hemp was basically exempted. In fact, during World War II, we had the deliberate effort to encourage hemp because our sources in Asia had been cut off. And then afterwards, you know, things happened till by 1970, it had become under the purview of what soon became the Drug Enforcement Administration, and it was left to the DEA to give out permits, which it did not do. To me, that's very curious how we ended up with this stance on a plant that, you know, we import it from other countries.
So when hemp was legalized along with recreational marijuana last year in Colorado, it caught the attention of farmers around the state. Farmers like Ryan Laughlin, who lives in Crested Butte.
Yeah, that's pretty much what my family's done since the late 40s here in Colorado.
Laughlin has farming in his blood. He's a third-generation Colorado farmer, and his aunts, uncles, cousins, a lot of them continue to farm today. Best calls Laughlin's decision to grow hemp an agrarian insurrection, since state regulations on hemp don't exist in Colorado yet, and the feds still define it as an illegal controlled substance. But as Best writes, that didn't stop Laughlin from seeing an opportunity to help himself and to help out farmers in Colorado, particularly where he grew up on the Front Range, where declines in the farming industry have hit the community pretty hard.
He lives in the mountains. He's going to stay there, but he also feels a certain draw to his hometown. And he laid that out for me very clearly when I went to visit him in early August. You know, he said, look at Main Street. It's not near what it used to be when I graduated from high school just 20 years ago.
As Best writes, that entrepreneurial streak, it goes back to his grandpa.
You know, he sees, how can I, you know, make money? And he said that he traced that, you know, to the influence of his grandfather, who had a string of discount stores that used to be common on the Great Plains called Gibson's.
Yeah, you know, he did a lot of things. He had banks and raised a lot of cattle. You know, as I was a kid, we had a lot of cattle. We did he was a big-time farmer still and did all this all at the same time.
Hemp is pretty well suited for the drought-ravaged West, since it uses less water than other common crops like corn or alfalfa. But because of the federal policy, farmers who want to grow hemp run into some real problems, not least of all because simply acquiring the seeds to get started is illegal. Were you afraid at all that the feds would just roll in and, you know, destroy your crop?
Not so much. I was, I figured that would be the worst. Comes the worst, you know. I was definitely not afraid of necessarily going to jail for planting, you know, basically rope. You know?
Laughlin harvested his crop in October, and it was the first hemp harvest in the U.S. since the 50s. He received a lot of attention in the process, and not just from reporters. Other farmers have contacted him for his advice.
In fact, yesterday I talked to a gentleman in Rocky Ford, and he was interested in growing hemp. And then the day before that, a couple of has land in Brighton, Colorado, that's interested. So, yeah, you know, it's about once or twice, you know, a week I get calls of people wanting to know how, you know, if we're going to go ahead and be able to get seeds into Colorado and not have any federal problems with customs.
On the federal level, hemp is getting support from both sides of the aisle. Democrats and Republicans alike are introducing legislation supporting industrial hemp.
You know, I think it's going to happen if we can just get it out there.
Hemp farming still carries a lot of uncertainty because of its federal standing, but for Laughlin, the potential is enormous, something his grandfather would have recognized.
You know, that's what hemp is so appealing to me, is all the different areas of the potential of making money in it, and in so many different areas is unlimited, you know, because it's from construction materials to food oil to, you know, clothing to fiber to, I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, biodiesel. I'm working on, you know, plant genetics now on seed production. You know, I'm pretty much have some of the only American hemp seed, you know, in America. So I'm going to work on, you know, developing different cultivars that works great for Colorado's dry climates. He's a big inspiration for sure.
For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Eric Scalak.
Sounds of the High Country features interviews with reporters at High Country News and is produced by KDNK in Carbondale. You're listening to KVNF. Stay tuned for the sweet sound coming up next. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.